Muslims from hugely diverse backgrounds and various ethnic groups dressed in similar simple white cloths, praying to the same God and circling round the same sacred structure. Scenes from the annual Hajj pilgrimage highlight the significance of the idea of unity among Muslims. But with all that's happening in the Muslim world, unity looks more like a distant dream banished from reality with each act of terrorism in the name of religion. Can Muslims see a golden era of unity and peace? This is The Debate.
A great lesson of the Hajj is to improve this spirit of brotherhood and empathy. Here, even arguing with and offending others is forbidden. Wearing uniform clothing, performing identical rites, making the same moves and behaving in a kind manner all mean equality and fraternity among those who believe in and are devoted to monotheism. This is Islam's clear message to any ideology and belief that regards a certain group of Muslims and believers in Kaaba and monotheism out of the circle of Islam.
Ayatollah Khamenei described global hegemony and the criminal Zionist network as the common enemy of Muslims. He says enemies are working hard to force Muslim nations into a period of stagnation and isolation to undermine their major cause, which is the liberation of Palestinian territories. In his annual message, Ayatollah Khamenei warned about enemy plots to sow discord among Muslims and called on them to be vigilant.
A look at West Asian countries from Pakistan and Afghanistan to Syria, Iraq and Palestine, the Persian Gulf Arab states and also North African countries from Libya, Egypt and Tunisia to Sudan and other countries reveals many truths. Civil wars, blind religious and sectarian fanaticism, political instabilities, the spread of brutal terrorism, the emergence of extremist groups and currents who slice open people's chests and cut out their hearts, armed gangs who kill children and women, behead men and rape women, and they even sometimes do these disgusting, outrageous crimes in the name of religion, all of these are the result of evil and hegemonic plots by foreign intelligence services and their regional allies.
Ayatollah Khamenei's comments come against the backdrop of rising violent attacks in several Muslim countries, including Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Only in Iraq, more than 5,000 people have lost their lives in violent attacks since April. In Syria, more than 100,000 people have been killed in unrest since 2011. Ayatollah Khamenei says certain Takfiri groups which commit heinous crimes against innocent people in Syria are manipulated by Zionists and their Western supporters. He also slammed what he called self-proclaanedefendants of religion who fanned the flames of the Shia-Sunni strife. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the Hajj pilgrimage has invalidated their false claims.
I, like many other Islamic scholars and sympathizers with the Islamic Ummah, reiterate that any word or action which fans the flames of discord among Muslims, and any insult to the sanctities of each one of the Muslim denominations, or any act of takfirism against any Islamic denominations, equals serving the camp of disbelievers and polytheism, and betraying Islam and is religiously unlawful.
You're watching The Debate. Joining me now live from Beirut is political commentator Mr. Eugene Darbous, and head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masoud Shajare, is with us live from London. I'll put the first question to our guest in Beirut, Mr. Darbous. Why is unity among Muslims so elusive, and what is hindering this unity?
Well, This development has its ups and downs. If you look at take a long longitudinal view of the relationship between the two major blocs, which is of course Sunni and Shia Islam, but also smaller denominations like the Druze or the Alawites, there have been periods of harmony and there have been periods where, for various reasons, there's been strife and conflict. I think at the moment, the root is in the conflict over the control of the region, where obviously the United States and the EU, but also Israel, are interested in sowing strife. But I think ultimately the solution lies in the social issues. Here we see, for example, in Bahrain or in Saudi Arabia, that the discontent on the part of the Shia population is not religious primarily, but economic. Other conflicts in Egypt and Tunisia, et cetera, it would be the same thing.
So let's bring in Mr. Shajara's idea on this as well. Mr. Shajara, what do you think is hindering unity?
Well, it's you know, if you look at the history, the recent history, you know, after the victory of Islamic Revolution in Iran, we saw suddenly a huge outflux of books against Shias and sort of sectarian book. When we looked at the Sinan, we looked at it very clearly. It was, you know, before the revolution, there were a handful of books attacking Tashayyu and Shias. After the revolution, there was a huge number of these books being published. I remember going to the mosque in London and asking for Quran, but you know, there was no Quran to be found to be given to us. But there were hundreds and hundreds of these takfiri books being given freely right across all the mosques in London and elsewhere around the world. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you look at the sort of the literature coming out of RAND cooperation in the United States and out of Zionist-run think tank groups, you'll see that they identified it very clearly that the way to stop the way Islam is actually progressing is to create conflict, and to create conflict between Shia and Sunni, to have a conflict between Salafi and Sufi. And this has been sort of planned to destroy the unity of Muslims. And every Muslim knows that one of the things that is hindering our victory and our victory to create a just society for ourselves and everybody else is a lack of unity. And this is being planned in United States and Israel, and it's been implemented by Saudi Arabia. And we saw even in Iraq, the way that insurgency at the beginning years was against U.S. hegemony, but that was hijacked by input from the Saudi Arabia, and the insurgency turned killing Muslims. And now we see sort of 1,000 Muslims are being killed every month in Iraq. Mm. And this is serves only one purpose, and that's the purpose of the U.S. and Israel. And it's being pursued by them and implemented by regional powers like Saudi Arabia.
Well, on the issue of takfirism, we heard the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution in his message refer to it as well. I'd like to put this question to Mr. Darbous in Beirut. Now, the thing is, we're hearing the leader say that horrible, disgusting crimes in the name of religion are taking place, and these, he says, I'm quoting, are the products of the arrogant plots of foreign intelligence services and their regional agents. And he says that the Zionists and their Western allies are using the Takfiri ideology to their benefit. They're supporting the bloodshed against other Muslims, and they're fueling the fire between the Shia and Sunni in this way. What do you think about where Takfirism came from and whether it was intentional to bring about this kind of division?
Well, these kind of extreme positions can only work if they can feed on a sense of injustice and hopelessness amongst the general population. I think one of the reasons why the Takfir or terrorist organizations and radical Islamist organizations are so successful in Syria at the moment is because there's a lack of a viable alternative. Both sides, both the pro-Western opposition and the, unfortunately, the government in Damascus, have illustrated an unwillingness, almost an inability, to negotiate in good faith, leaving a vacuum for these groups. And these groups feed on frustration. And many people in the opposition in Syria say, this is the only way to go because they are well-funded. We are not getting the weapons we need. So I think this vacuum is the one point. And the second point are structural injustices. If you look at the kinds of fanaticism we saw in the Balkans, for example, where the radical parties were largely Christian, it was the same situation. There are differences between language and religion or within religions, but beside this, we see large amounts of ongoing structural injustice that have to be dealt with. These people can only succeed if they have something to feed on.
Hmm. Well, Mr. Chajer, I guess they're saying that Takfiris are gaining momentum, are gaining ground in Syria, in Iraq or elsewhere because there's a lack of any alternative, there's a vacuum. What do you think?
I don't agree with that. I mean, the reality is that there is more money being spent on promotion of Takfiri by the Saudis in the last 30 years than any other religious sort of financing anywhere in the world. The reality is that Takfirism should not be sort of mistaken with radicalism. Takfirism is something which is being designed to create hatred within the family and actually destroy the unity of the family. And it really has got no roots in Islamic beliefs. This concept of cutting a man open and eating his heart, it comes from a jahiliyyah. It's not even within the culture of Syria, it's not within the culture of even Iraq, it's the culture of jahiliyyah within Pacific parts of the Saudi sort of ugly past of jahiliyyah. And now it's been Islamatized, what Hind did to Hazrat Hamza, now they're doing to fellow Muslims and they're shouting Allahu Akbar. Hmm. And remembering Hind was a kafir at the time. And this is being done under the pretense of Islam, deliberately financed and promoted. If it is just an issue of injustice and Muslims rising up against injustice, why is it that not even a single one of these so-called Mujahideen Takfiris have ever gone to Palestine to fight against the Israeli Zionist regime? Not even a single one of them has ever done that. This is being deliberately organized and promoted, and really the sort of the religious leaders for this are Obama and the Saudis. If Obama doesn't declare jihad, these Takfiris will not go and fight. Mm. Hence, we don't see them fighting neither in Kashmir, neither in Palestine, and Myanmar or anywhere else. They only fight where United States and Zionist state declares legitimate jihad. Mm. And we need to understand that and separate that from the legitimate sort of grievances that the Muslim Ummah has got because of injustices which are taking place.
Mm. I'd like to get a response about that from our guest in Beirut. But before we do that, I'm hearing that our comments that have been posted on our Facebook page already. We'll take a look at those comments now and we'll be right back.
Today is the day in which non-believers find it difficult to withstand their anger and frustration for witnessing how the Islamic religion is skyrocketing in the world. It cannot be compared with any other so-called religion. I'm very much proud to be a Muslim. The Zionists and Western powers have always tried to sow discord among Muslims. They fear that if Muslims unite, they will rule the world.
Comments posted on our Facebook page. They'll go straight to our guest in Beirut, Mr. Darbus. Now, Mr. Chajer in London was telling us there that you can't say Takfirism is radicalism. It's rather, he says, something that's been designed by the enemies of Islam to create a false image of religion and Islam deliberately. And he says that as evidence, why aren't these groups fighting for things that are known as, causes for Muslims and are known as Islamic causes? What's your response to that?
Well, he's right in the sense that we should not mix radicalism and this sort of fanaticism. Radicalism can also mean that I'm very determined, that I'm very consistent, not only in my faith, but my actions. And in this sense, it would be a positive phenomenon. What we're seeing here is the warping of religion, the intentional abuse of religion, because it's not only within the Muslim world, but it's actually within the other religions as well. We see that religion is on the rise. The assumption that a a non-religious, if you will, secular world was going to dominate, that religion would wither away, has proven to be wrong. So I think one of the ways of dealing with this reintroduction and this rising interest of religion is to bring in these groups. You see them also, obviously, within Christianity, very fanatical groups, especially in the United States, but also in other parts of the world. So I think this is a phenomenon that can be found in all three Abrahamic religions, obviously within the Jewish world as well. I would not say that it's only a conspiracy. That would be too simple. It is the response of a lack of unity on the part of all three Abrahamic religions. I would say it also a lack of religious humility, considering the holy holidays that we're in today.
Mr. Douglas, if I could just jump in here. You're saying that we can see this trend in other religions as well. But, I mean, what we're seeing from these so-called extremist groups, the Muslim extremist groups, cannot be compared to the sort of actions that other radical groups from other religions are, carrying out. So how can we compare the two aspects? The question here would be, why are these groups in situations that can be seen as in line with the interests of countries like Saudi Arabia, other regional states, the US, Israel?
Well, we saw this kind of brutality in Yugoslavia, and it was primarily from the Christians, not the Muslims. We saw this kind of brutality in Rwanda, also from Christian groups, in Kenya to an extent. So I would say that there's plenty of blame to go around. Why is it concentrated at the moment in the Muslim world? I think it's obvious. There are groups in Saudi Arabia, and it's not the Saudi government, please. They also had their problems with Al-Qaeda. There are very powerful groups, some connected to the government, who are funding this. We see throughout the world in the last 20 years massive amounts of money going into all Muslim countries and to undermine legitimate protest and legitimate radical groups who are criticizing not only Palestine, but also Kashmir and parts of the former Soviet Union. So I would say it's true this is orchestrated, but it would be incomplete to assume it's merely a conspiracy.
That's not true.
Yeah, Mr. Shajar, go ahead.
That is not true. No, this is not true. I mean, to say that the Saudi government is not involved in this is actually becoming almost an ostrich and hiding our head in the sand. The reality is that the huge amount of financier is coming into these groups. This is not, this is not coming from individuals. This is actually Saudi backing. Sheikh Bandar himself is involved in organizing this. This is already exposed and everybody knows about it. But also to say that the Saudis have got the same problem, that's not true. You don't see these takfiris who Saudi Arabia unleashes in Syria or elsewhere operating inside Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia doesn't want to have that sort of havoc and disunity in its own border, but it unleashes it in elsewhere. And when you look at the so-called ulama, like Arafi, who's got 5 million followers on Twitter, and he said on his tweet that they asked me about jihad. Let me make it very clear. You cannot fight Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar because they are friends. But you should go and fight in Syria and elsewhere. This is orchestrated by legitimization of certain so-called ulama in Saudi Arabia, which is unleashed where the West wants it to be unleashed. This is not unleashed everywhere. It's unleashed where the West wants it to be unleashed. It's not unleashed in the Persian Gulf state because they want to have their harmony. But where they want to destroy harmony, when they want to actually then create havoc, they unleash it there and nowhere else.
So, Mr. Dabus, do you have anything to say about that?
I'm not saying that there's not a conspiracy behind this. I'm saying that this explanation is incomplete. And if we look down the road and say, how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to not only confront it, but also eradicate it? You have to remove the fertile soil for these people. Yes, there's a lot of Saudi money. I would argue it's not coming from their foreign ministry. But they are succeeding because the field is fertile. So we have to deal with the feeling of injustice and hopelessness in this region. And I must say, I'm living in a country like Lebanon, there is a lot of hopelessness, and religious leaders on all sides are partially responsible for this.
Okay, well, quickly, we're running out of time. The concluding remarks, Mr. Shahjara, how responsible do you think Muslims themselves are when it comes to unity?
Well, I remember at the time, at the height of Bosnia affair, I was sitting with Mustafa Ceric, the Grand Mufti, and we were talking about this unity. And he said, and we all agreed, that the cause, the reason that Bosnians are being slaughtered, raped, is the issue of lack of unity. And then we agreed that they are not allowing us to be united. He turned around and he said, why are you allowing them to create this unity? And I think to that point, we need to go back to our roots. And this unity is a must. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, "Attasimu bihamdillahi jami'an," it's a command on all of us Muslims to unite. And we should not allow these Saudi-backed takfiris to actually create this unity and create otherness within family of Islam.
Head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masood Shahjara, speaking there live from London. Thank you very much. A big thank you to our guest in Beirut as well, political commentator Mr. Eugene Darbous. Thank you so much for staying with us on another edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lizghi, it's goodbye.